My head? She whipped around to face me. You think you're the only one who has problems? The only one who's in danger? Well, let me tell you. Her face was red with anger as she poked me. Not everything is about you, Zeno Bispo. Brooks froze in mid-thought, her finger still on my chest. Holy Kay, you made a deal to save me? You were sort of out cold. I don't think your memory is exactly running on all cylinders. Tears filled her eyes, and she socked me in the arm. You're such an idiot! Oh, boy. I hated it when Mom cried, and this felt infinitely worse. Don't cry, I said, patting her shoulder, as if that would stop the waterworks. It's fine. I couldn't let you die. We're like family now, right? She threw her arms around me, squeezing me so tight I thought she might choke me to death. Her hair was soft and smelled like lavender soap. I felt like a wooden soldier, arms stiff at my sides. Was I supposed to hug her back? I mean, I definitely wanted to, but when she let me go, the scowl was back. I can't let you be that monster soldier for me. That's so not happening. Wait a second, I said, glad to change the subject. How come I've never been able to do telepathy with anyone before now? Brooke shrugged. Maybe it's because you've been touched by our world, or by the magic, or maybe because of the eclipse. I don't know for sure. And she grabbed my arm and turned my hand so she could see the inside of my wrist. A black symbol was inked there like a tattoo, a quarter-sized skull with sleeping eyes. He's claimed your life? Brooks whispered in horror. I gripped my wrist, covering the tattoo, knowing it was more than a design. It was a binding promise. Zeno Bispo! Brooks threw her fist onto her hips. If you think I'm going to let you turn yourself into that evil stinking god and spend your eternity in the land of fear, then... You're not. She blinked. We're going to stop him first, I said. Chapter 16. It's my stupid fault, Brooks said. If I'd done my part, we wouldn't be here right now. I've ruined everything. No, you'd be in the underworld swimming in Pus River, I mumbled. My eyes scanned the desert. I needed a walking stick since I'd lost another cane to another lousy monster. At this rate, I was going to need a jumbo pack. I broke off a long branch from a creosote bush. It was skinny, but better than nothing.
Zane,
Brooks's voice was small.
I have to tell you something.
But before she could say anything else, Hondo threw open the back door. We've got a problem. What's up, Hondo? I asked. There's a grande chicken that's been pecking at the front door for the last 2 hours, and it won't go away. 3 days ago, I would have considered it a prank, but after everything that had happened, I started for the door. Let's go see this pollo loco of yours. A minute later, the three of us stood on the front porch, looking down at the three sizes too big chicken that wasn't acting like a chicken at all. It didn't bob around with its head down. It hurried back and forth in a frenzy, spreading its wings, clucking and clicking up a storm. It's rabid, Hondo said. Like in those scary movies when the animals kill everyone? You ever see Cujo or the birds? Brooks cocked her head. Do you think it's trying to tell us something? Forgetting that Hondo was standing there, I asked Brooks, can you use your bird brain, your bird connection, and figure out what it's saying? You think all bird speak is the same? Brooks tilted her chin up proudly. Please. Hondo gave me a weird look, and right when he opened his mouth to say something, the chicken turned and bolted toward Ms. Cab's house. Hey, wait! I shouted as we all hurried after the bird. The chicken pecked at Ms. Cab's front door, then tilted its head at me. It rolled its eyes before it went back to striking the door with its beak. I think it wants to go inside, I said. Brooks rang the doorbell and peered in through the front window. No one's in there. Hondo turned the doorknob. It was unlocked. He raised a brow and gave me a sly smile. Let's see what the pollo wants. Miss Cab would string us up by our ears for going in uninvited, but before I could protest, the chicken bolted inside and over to the living room. It jumped onto the coffee table, stomping and clucking loudly. Hondo looked around. This place is creepy, Zane. How can you work here? Then he picked up the box of eyes. I hollered, stop! But it was too late. He had already opened it, and his face was turning green. They're moving! He dropped the box, and all the eyeballs rolled out onto the floor. And then, my iron biceps champion wrestler uncle passed out. Brooks hurried over and put a pillow under his head while flapping her hand back and forth across his face. Hondo! Hondo! The chicken hopped off the table and hurried around the living room, picking up the eyeballs one at a time and putting them back in the box, except one unfortunate eye that went splat in its beak. That's when I realized. Miss Cab? She stuck the last eyeball in its place and nodded slowly. How the heck had she turned into a chicken? Then I remembered what Muwan had said, that all the seers had been taken care of. If the seers had all been turned into animals, they couldn't warn the gods about Puke's evil plan. Hondo stirred awake, rubbing his head. Ay, necesito un médico, o tequila, necesito tequila. He was like my mom. Whenever he got freaked out or mad during a wrestling match, Spanish flew from his mouth like hurricane winds. As I helped him sit up, I said, pretty sure Miss Cab doesn't have any tequila. Do you really want me to call a doctor? Hondo shrugged me away. Who said anything about a doctor? Then Mr. Ortiz walked in the open door. ¿Qué pasó? Where's Antonia? Brooks and I shared a glance. Miss Cab jumped onto the sofa and ran back and forth, squawking like a bird on fire. She was trying to tell me something, but what? Hondo got to his feet groggily, rubbing his head. Tell that thing to shut up! It's giving me a headache! I sat on the sofa and began to pet Miss Cab's feathery head, thinking maybe that would calm her down. She jabbered on and on until her clucks began turning into words. Bawk! What, Bach, do I have to do to... Bach, get your attention, Saint Obispo. You can talk? I shrieked. Everyone went stone still and stared at me. Even Miss Cab stopped fussing. Oh, Saint, she said, you can hear me. Thank the gods. And she blinked, and her beak formed a perfect O. Oh, my, that means I'm part god. The words felt like marbles in my mouth. Telepathy. The others rushed toward me with a flurry of questions. It can talk? You can understand chicken speak? What do you mean, part god? That was Hondo. I held my hand up to silence them. This chicken is Miss Cab, and she's talking to me, and I can't hear her over your voices, so stop jabbering. Yeah, they looked at me like I'd just fallen off the loony bin truck, everyone but Brooks. Miss Cab stretched her neck, and I resumed petting her. I was kidnapped, Zane, at the crossroads to Xibalba. Some stupid lower demon of the underworld threw a sack over my head. She shuddered. Me, secret keeper of the great soothsayer. As she spoke, I translated for everyone. She continued talking so fast it was hard to keep up, but every time I tried to get her to slow down, she gave me the evil eye and chattered even faster. Xibalba isn't what it used to be, she sputtered. Ishtab has taken over, set up new rules, even redecorated the place, and let me tell you, she has nothing. When I translated, Hondo raised a brow and looked around Ms. Cab's cluttered living room, which was filled with different-sized plastic snow globes from all over the world. Right, no taste, he muttered. Apparently, when good old Apuch was sent away, a goddess named Ishtab, the keeper of the souls of warriors and women who died in childbirth, took his place as the ruler of the underworld. Ms. Cab said, "She had to battle a few other gods to win the throne of the dead, which made those gods good and mad. But more importantly," she went on, "some of the demons were like double agents playing both sides. Someone had somehow learned of the prophecy of fire and told Ishtab all about you, Zane." "But who?" I asked after I translated for everyone. Hondo rubbed his forehead. "Hang on, Zane. This is crazy talk. Who the heck are Ishtab and Apuch?" Mr. O stuffed his hands in his pockets.
"Ay, Dios. I know magic when I see it."
He glanced at Ms. Cab and said,
"I still think you're hermosa."
To which she squawked,
"Oh, lords of fright, this man is a senseless fool."
I didn't translate that part. Ms. Cab lowered her voice, as if anyone could understand her, and said,
"Why is that Nawal here? I told you not to trust her."
"She saved my life," I said.
Ms. Cab tried to harumph, but clucked instead. By this point, there was no use trying to keep everything else secret, so I told Mr. O and Hondo about the prophecy, making Hondo promise he wouldn't tell Mom. I even told them the part about Los Angeles, leaving out the deal I'd made with Apuch, because Hondo would punch my lights out.
"Maybe I do need some tequila," Hondo said, looking a little pale.
My mind went into overdrive. So Ishtab was the one who sent that little assassin Alush. She wanted to prevent me from fulfilling the prophecy so she wouldn't have to fight Apuch for the throne. Brooks chewed on her bottom lip, pacing the room. What was her deal? How come she was so quiet? It was seriously starting to make me nervous. Ms. Cab's wing trembled as she blinked up at me.
"Tell me every detail of when you let Apuch out. Even how the monster looked. Probably more hideous than before. He always was the ugliest god, or at least in the top 10.
I didn't want to talk about it in front of everyone else, especially Brooks, so I let down my guard and allowed Miss Cab in, hoping it would work like it did with Brooks.
"Can you hear me?"
Miss Cab cocked her head and hopped into the air.
"Yes!"
I brought her into my lap and told her everything, leaving out the soldier of death part.
I had to let him out. Otherwise, Brooks would have died.
"I felt something the moment he was released."
Ms. Cab shook her skinny chicken head.
"The earth stood still for a split second. Of course, none of the gods would notice, being such dense, self-obsessed beings. But we seers, we knew. Problem is, there was nothing we could do about it, because we couldn't pinpoint his location. It was like he went off the grid. I lost all contact with the other seers, which tells me they're all in non-human form, too."
"What's she saying?"
Hondo asked restlessly. "The gods are dense, and the other seers are probably chickens, too," I said. Brooks folded her arms and nodded.
"They are kind of dense. Except for Kukulkan, of course."
Gee, that made me feel really good about being a halfer. Unless, of course, I was Holy K's son. What had Brooks said? He was the god of coolness? Yep, could definitely see the resemblance there.
"How would you know?" I asked. "Do you hang out with the gods?"
There were still so many secrets swirling around Brooks, I couldn't help but wonder what she wasn't telling me.
"No," Brooks said. I read all about them."
"And," she rolled her eyes, "everyone knows they changed when they came to America."
"Changed how?" Hondo asked.
Brooks fidgeted with the hem of her jacket.
"Like they forgot the old ways. They lost their edge, you know?"
"Huh," I grunted. "They seem pretty edgy to me, or at least old Puke does." Looking back to Ms. Cab, I asked, "Why would he take me to L.A.?"
"He could have picked anywhere. Interesting that he picked a busy city. You said he liked the chaos?"
Her eyes went wide.
"Of course. Chaos will hide him from the other gods. And vice versa."
She flapped her wings.
He said someone is hiding from him?
I repeated everything Miss Cab was saying, while pondering who Apooch could have been referring to. Hondo slugged me in the arm. He hadn't stopped looking at me with a goofy smile since the big demigod reveal.
I knew there was something different about you, he said.
You did? Mr. O took off his hat and rubbed his bald head.
When you were a baby, Hondo said, you used to do local things like talk in full sentences before you were even a year old. And one time, you touched your mom's hot curling iron, but didn't get burned. Another time, we found you crawling in the desert toward the volcano.
He ran his hand through his hair excitedly.
It makes sense now. You really are a freak.
His face got serious.
I mean, in a good way.
So, do you have any superpowers? I mean, beyond creeping on people's minds?
Seeing in the dark, I guess.
I thought about the recent storms. They always came when I was scared or angry.
Had I caused those?
And what about that freak storm in L.A.? What had that been about? Did it have something to do with my dad making an appearance? I hadn't seen Hondo this excited since the last World Wrestling Championship 3 years ago, when he won $1,000 betting on Bone Crusher. It felt good to let it all out, to share all the weirdness of the last few days with him and Mr. Ortiz. If only Mom were here, maybe she could fill in the gaps. But I couldn't let her get mixed up in this. Where was she anyway? I hoped she was okay.
Hondo slung his arm over my shoulders. So how do we take down this son of a... the stinking one?
Ms. Cab set a wing in my hand.
I'm sorry I failed you.
I let out a big breath.
You tried, at least.
Did you find out anything about Rosie?
She blinked her little chicken eyes, and I could see the sadness there.
I send messages everywhere. If any of my friends see her, Zane, they'll try and protect her.
My heart wedged itself into the big hole in my chest.
Thanks, Missy. By the way, where did you put that gateway map?
I asked, hoping she wouldn't catch on to my plan.
In the bookcase, like always. Why?
I walked over and pulled out the scroll. I unrolled it in front of her, then took hold of her wing again.
Show me how to use it.
Absolutely not, Ms. Cab said. Do you know what others would do to get their grubby hands on this map?
I knew we were running out of time. Apooch had given me 3 moons, and if this map could get us to where I wanted to go, I needed to know how to read it.
Mr. Ortiz,
I looked up at him.
Yes?
Can you watch over Ms. Cab?
A broad smile formed, and his eyes danced.
Claro que sí!
Miss Cab shook her head vigorously.
Zane Obispo, I don't need a babysitter. I am a great Maya seer, and he's just a pathetic human.
My mouth turned up. No offense, Miss Cab, but, you're a chicken right now. That silenced her for a few seconds.
At least take an eyeball.
For what?
So I can visit you in your dreams, and so I can keep an eye on that girl.
I seriously didn't want Ms. Cab in my dreams, and I for sure didn't want to carry around one of her eyeballs.
You'll need my guidance, she screamed.
I let go of her wing and put up a wall in my head so her words just spun into clucking.
Where are you going? Mr. O asked.
Brooks and I shared a glance.
Can you read this map?
I asked her.
It's a gateway map,
she said, her voice trembling.
I can read some of the glyphs, not all.
She ran her long fingers along the distressed edges.
I think I can figure it out.
Miss Cab was squawking at the top of her chicken lungs. Hondo popped his knuckles.
I'm coming too.
No way, I said.
You want your mom to lose her mind? Call the police?
He said. It's the only way. I'll leave her a note telling her we went fishing for the weekend. That'll buy us time. Besides, he said, flexing his biceps, you're going to need my luchador moves. He was right. I couldn't involve Mom, and I couldn't just up and leave. She'd lose it for sure. Plus, I didn't need the attention of being a missing kid.
Fine, I said reluctantly.
Mr. O took my arm gently.
Before you go, I have something that might help your journey. Come.
So I followed him out, but not before I grabbed the smallest and least creepy eyeball I could find.
Chapter 17. Mr. O asked the others to wait at Miss Cab's, because what he had to show me was a secret. We made our way across the road and through the side gate to his greenhouse.
You cannot believe my discovery, he said as we stepped inside his little oasis.
There were rows and rows of pepper plants, red, green, purple, and yellow. And they came in all sizes. Some of the peppers were as small as walnuts, and others were as long as bananas. The place was warm and smelled fresh, like the desert after a summer rain. I didn't want to offend the guy, but I didn't see why I had to drop Mission Puke to see his garden, especially when the future of the world was at stake. Mr. O paced, rubbing his chin.
I've done it, Zane.
He pointed to a single red pepper shaped like a bulging tomato. It clung to a tiny green plant, its weight bending the stem.
Meet La Muerte.
You named the pepper after the Grim Reaper?
The Guinness Book will put my name in writing now.
He pushed back his straw hat and smiled.
For a pepper?
I didn't mean to sound unimpressed, but I didn't get what was so special about La Muerte. He tugged on his pant leg and smiled, still pacing.
If I get in the book, Antonia, she will find me famous. She will go to dinner with me.
My face must have been blank, because he clapped me on the shoulder and laughed.
I asked her, when will you go out with me? And she said, when you are famous. Do you see now? If I'm famous, she will love me.
Oh. Oh. I had to give the guy credit. I mean, he had a goal to marry Miss Cab, and no matter how many times she told him no, he never quit. I didn't have the heart to tell him I didn't think his being in a book could make someone love him. So how's the pepper going to get you in the world record book?
The one in the book now, it's the hottest in the world. It, how do you say, it paralyzes only the brain.
Only? Like forever? I asked. His eyes glittered with excitement.
For maybe 2 horas. But my pepper, it lasts many hours longer. One bite, and she will freeze your legs, then your arms and hands.
He stood stiff to illustrate.
Then the brain. So La Muerte is now the hottest. I break the record.
Definitely respected the guy. Mr. Ortiz had taught me about how, long ago, the Spanish used to grow peppers in monasteries and thought they had magical properties. I knew he grew weird varieties, but all this time, his top-secret mission was this? What he said next was an even bigger surprise.
But that isn't important anymore.
He grabbed my arm and shook it excitedly.
I have spent years to make this, Zane. All the other fails were good steps to this moment.
He swept his arm in front of him.
All these plants, they grew only to give me this. It was their destiny. Don't you see?
He said, still grinning like a kid on his birthday.
I thought all this time I was trying for the world record. But it was for you. Destiny had a different plan. Yes?
The thought grew slowly, and I finally caught on. Mr. Ortiz wanted to give me his pepper to stop Apuch. Could it work? It was one thing to paralyze a human. It was something else to try and paralyze a god. He tugged the pepper off the vine and very carefully set it in a small burlap bag.
For you, he said,
placing the sack in my hands. To stop the stinking one.
What about the Guinness Book and Miss Cab?
No good to have a world record if the world is gone.
He had a point.
I didn't know what to say.
What if it doesn't work? What if I can't do it?
He clapped my shoulder.
I always knew you were very special, Zane. I believe you can stop this monster.
It felt really good that Mr. Ortiz had so much faith in me, but it also felt like a heavy burden, because I didn't know if I deserved it.
Destiny smiles on me, Zane. She was asleep for many years, and now she has come to my door so I could give you this chance. All I had to do was open it.
I gripped the sack. But if your destiny had been something else, something dangerous, would you still have opened the door? Mr. Ortiz thought for a second, rubbed his chin, then looked at me.
If you don't open the door, she will come in through the window.
Before I left, I turned to face Mr. Ortiz. Could you not say anything about all this to my mom?
I will honor your wishes to keep her safe.
He placed his weathered hands on my shoulders, tightening his hold.
No te preocupes. I will protect both of them.
Hondo wrote 6 versions of the note for Mom before I finally approved this one. Hey, sis, me and Zane went fishing. Wanted some fresh air, some bro time, after the bank heist. Back in a few days. I picked up the pen and added, we can talk about my dad. My hand hovered. I didn't know if I should write when I come home, if I come home, later. I finally wrote later, then signed my name and stuck the note on the fridge. Where could she have gone after she talked to the cops? At least I felt a little better knowing Mr. O would keep an eye on her and Ms. Cab. Hondo left to get money from the ATM, and when he came back, he tossed a stack of $100 bills onto the kitchen table, where Brooks had the gateway map spread out.
That's a lot of money, Brooks said, leaning across the table for a better look.
Hondo smiled. Been saving for a speaker system upgrade for the truck, but I figured we need some coin for food and stuff.
I can't let you waste all your cash, I said.
On saving the world? Hondo laughed. What good does it do me if we get blown to smithereens?
Can't argue with that, Brooks said.
Hondo grabbed a big sack off the counter, reached inside, and pulled out a leather tool belt. Then, one by one, he began stuffing tools from the sack into the loops. A hammer, a screwdriver, a small axe.
What's all that for? Brooks asked.
Some war stash, Hondo said. Gotta be prepared. I highly doubted his tools were going to save us. But how do you prepare to save the world when you're a featherweight up against an immortal heavyweight? Hondo swung his arm around my neck. So what's the plan? Go find a few gods to help us take this guy down? I thought the same thing until Brooks saw the flaw in that plan. Tell him, Brooks.
Wouldn't do any good, she said. The gods are pretty much equal in strength and power. It would only start a war that would bring about the same result. Everyone dead.
Hondo didn't even flinch. Okay, then we find a magical gateway to the underworld and pummel this guy ourselves?
I wished it were that easy. But I knew how Pooch wouldn't be in Shibalba.
He'd had hundreds of years to plan his revenge, and I figured he wasn't about to just waltz into hell and ask for the keys back. Besides, battling Apuch ourselves would only end in disaster. He'd head drop us in less than a second. I had something different in mind, a backup plan, because I couldn't balance the whole world's survival on a single chili pepper. Despite my promise to Mr. O to keep it a secret, I'd already shown the pepper to Brooks and Hondo. I had no choice. Too much was at stake. And they'd agreed. We definitely needed a plan B.
You ever heard of the Hero Twins? I asked Brooks.
Her face went blank. I waved my hand in front of her eyes. Earth to Brooks.
What?
Have you heard the story of the Hero Twins? She rolled her eyes.
Hunapu and Shebalamke?
Yeah, whatever you just said.
What about them?
They defeated the gods of the underworld, and they never let anyone forget it either, she argued. Big braggers, if you ask me.
You actually know them?
Brooks looked back at the map and twisted her mouth like she was trying to keep it closed.
You do know them, don't you?
Might have met the dirtbags once or twice. A vein in my forehead throbbed.
And you didn't think you should tell me?
Why would I ever want to tell you about those losers? What do they have to do with anything? Hondo rubbed the back of his neck and his eyes bugged out like he knew a storm might be brewing. I threw my hands up.
Oh, I don't know. Maybe the fact that they're the only mortals to have defeated Apuch? They have to have his playbook, right?
I knew Brooks was too smart to have overlooked this connection. Her nostrils flared.
Those guys are nothing but trouble, and they're not exactly mortals, she added. Their mom was the daughter of some lord in the underworld, and their dad was the god Hudhunapu, except he wasn't actually alive. I mean, when the mom met him, he was just a head, a skull.
Hondo grimaced. She fell for a skull? Was she desperate or something?
I don't even want to know, I said. Brooks shrugged. Not worth knowing.
The twins might be our only shot, I said. Hondo popped open a bag of Cheetos and stuffed a few in his mouth.
I get where you're going with this. Maybe they'll share their war strategy with you.
Exactly.
Okay, first of all, Brooks said with a huff, they're arrogant, selfish, obnoxious, weaselly.
She crossed her arms.
They've never told anyone the real truth of how they defeated Puke. Mostly, they've let the story build them into some stupid legend status so they can keep the magical powers the gods gave them for being such, she made air quotes, heroes. I mean, who cares that they took down stupid Seven Macaw, as if that's hard or something?
Seven who? Hondo said.
Some guy who wanted to be the supreme god, Brooks offered.
Was there ever a time you arrogant gods weren't trying to knock each other off to gain more power?
Okay, I said. So aside from their being jerks, do you know where to find them?
Brooks reached into the bag of Cheetos, grabbed a handful, and tossed them into her mouth.
Brooks! She groaned. Venice.
Italy? Hondo rubbed his chin. We don't have enough cash for that kind of mileage.
Brooks shook her head, looking suddenly sour.
Venice Beach, California. That was in Los Angeles.
Los Angeles?
It started to make sense.
Crap!
Crap? Brooks wiped some orange powder off her mouth.
Crap what?
I told her what Apuch had said, but they can't hide from me for long. I bet old Puke is there for the twins.
Why would he care about them? Brooks asked.
Hondo, why would old Puke want the twins? I said, knowing he was following my logic. Hondo smashed his fist into his palm, and a slow grin spread over his face.
Revenge, of course.
I mean, he didn't just pick that city out of the blue, right? I said.
But if I can get there in time to warn them he's coming for them, they'll owe me. A favor for a favor.
Zane, Brooks said. They won't help you. They don't care about anything but themselves. Even if we made the trip, they wouldn't agree to see you.
Why not?
You have to earn their attention. It's a Maya thing.
What's that supposed to mean?
I should say it's a Maya supernatural thing. Those with power want to keep it, which means they only hang with those who have the gold. They don't wallow with common humans. No offense, Hondo.
Hondo shrugged.
But I'm not common, I said. My dad's a Maya god.
Right, Brooks sighed. But we can't tell them that now, can we?
She leaned across the table.
Please, forget about it.
Her voice quivered.
It's too risky.
Riskier than facing demon runners? The god of the dead? I looked from Hondo to Brooks. Does anyone have a better idea?
You're right, Zane, Hondo said. Can't rush into a match without a game plan. He rubbed his chin, turning to Brooks. Risky how, Brooks? She looked glum, like what I was asking her to do was worse than jumping into a fire pit.
They're tricksters, she said. People wait years to get in to see them, to ask for favors. Like once, this guy needed some protection for his family. They lived in a really bad neighborhood, and you know what those idiots told him?
Brooks scowled.
They laughed and told him to learn how to fight.
What are they, like in the mafia or something? Hondo asked.
Not in the mafia, Brooks said. They're the kings of it.
I shook my head. Hang on, the Hero Twins? The ones who defeated the Underworld? They run organized crime now?
Not crime, Brooks said. Organized magic.
Oh, Hondo said, smashing the now empty Cheetos bag. That sounds better. I leaned closer to Brooks.
If you don't want to go, I get it.
Brooks twisted her hair around her pinky.
You'll need to bring them a gift.
Why? Hondo asked. Is that like some kind of honoring the king thing?
Not a king thing. A birthday thing. Tomorrow's their birthday, Brooks said.
Then she mumbled, Trust me, they don't even deserve a birthday.
Trust?
Ms. Cab had said not to trust Brooks. I'd ignored the advice because I didn't want it to be true. But I suspected Brooks wasn't telling me everything. She'd been weirdly quiet at Miss Cab's, and I could tell wheels were turning in her mind. But what choice did I have? Brooks knew important stuff I didn't, and we didn't have time to argue. I had to trust her. I rolled up the map and headed for the door. Brooks caught me, grabbed my arm, and twisted me around.
Zane, are you 100% sure you want to do this? No one ever leaves without owing them something.
She released her hands quickly, probably thinking I would jump into her mind.
I already owe a debt to our pooch, and after tonight, we only have 2 moons to change that, I said more boldly than I felt. We have to try.
She twisted her mouth to the side and let out a long breath.
You risked your life for me. Mated.
She stopped herself before spilling any more to Hondo.
Okay. I'll take you there. It's the least I can do.
You don't have to, I said, feeling suddenly guilty.
I mean, I want you to come, but if...
You'll never get in without me. Let's just hope we don't run into any more demons.
I know you're scared.
I'm not scared, Obispo. I've lost all my demon-tormenting flashlights, and I'm not about to go back to that cave to retrieve them. She tucked a piece of hair behind her ear.
Now about this map.
Are we using a magical gateway? Hondo's eyebrows shot up.
Brooks said, There aren't any close enough.
How do you know? I asked. Did you...
You learned how to read the map?
No, I mean, I told you I could probably figure it out, and... She sighed and unfolded the map.
See how it's in panels? She said. Well, when folded the right way, the hieroglyphs connect and their meanings change, so it's always fluctuating. But if you follow this blue line...
Hondo and I leaned closer, trying to follow.
It travels to California, right? She said. But there aren't any flashing gateways between here and there. The closest one is in Texas, which would lead us to the North Pole, and...
She folded the panels a different way, giving us a new view.
Once there, we'd have to go to Iceland.
What? No direct flights? Hondo said. What a ripoff. Okay, I said, my head spinning. I get it. We'll have to drive. Brooks nodded.
But we need to be there by 9 p.m. if you want to see the twins, or else you'll have to wait another day, and we don't have that kind of time.
What's so special about 9?
Doors close after that.
How do you know? Brooks rolled her eyes.
Their birthday is like a universal event, and invitations went out. I sort of got one.
Hondo nodded slowly and grinned.
So you're an it girl. Nice.
Brooks slugged Hondo in the arm. Call me that again and I'll drop you from the top of a mountain.
Brooks? An it girl? I wasn't even sure what that was, but I guessed it meant she was part of the cool crowd. But that made no sense. I mean, cool girls don't usually wear beat-up combat boots, basic black hoodies, and zero makeup. And they for sure didn't talk to me. Chapter 18. We piled into Hondo's black F-150 truck. The thing was a beast on huge wheels. Hondo spent much of his free time waxing her to a shine, and most of his money tricking her out. We were on the open highway a few minutes later. I let the window down and leaned out. The cool night air whipped through my hair. I'd put Miss Cab's pinkish eyeball, it looked like it once belonged to a giant rat, in a plastic sandwich bag, and carefully stashed it in my backpack on account of not wanting it to pop like a grape in my pocket.
"Looks like we should take I-10 straight through Tucson and Phoenix," Brooks said, studying a roadmap Hondo had picked up. Hondo grinned and turned on some really bad punk rock that rattled my bones. I'd never been out of New Mexico, so crossing the state line into Arizona felt like a get-out-of-jail-free card. The whole landscape changed from familiar yucca and mesquite to funny-shaped cactus with arms. Hondo called them saguaro. In the dark, the tall cactus looked like living things that could uproot themselves and chase after us. Okay, so I was paranoid. But who wouldn't be after the day I'd had? Fighting off demon runners, swimming through darkness, cutting deals with the Lord of the Dead, talking to a very angry chicken, and saving a life. Bet that's even more than you gods typically do in just a few hours. It was already close to midnight, and the exhaustion was settling in. My whole body felt like it had been battered with stones. Hondo must have seen me fighting sleep.
"Go on," he said. "Take a snooze."
"I can stay awake," I said. "Talk to you."
"Nah, I'm used to being up all night. Go on," he insisted. "Catch some Z's."
I looked over my shoulder at Brooks in the back cab. She was slumped against the door, fast asleep. Even though I'm terrified of becoming a soldier of death, I thought, I would still make the same deal to save her. A few minutes later, I closed my eyes and fell into a foggy dream world. I was in some kind of night jungle. The trees were made of aluminum and had sharp claw-like branches. A distant howl drew my attention toward a narrow, dark path. Strange whispers bounced off the trees. A single bar of moonlight crept through the silvery branches, and that's when I saw her, standing on the path right in front of me.
"Rosie!"
I took off running. My legs were long and lean and fast. It was incredible, even better than flying in a dream. I could run like this forever. As soon as I reached her, I fell to my knees to wrap my arms around the old goof. But she turned to mist and disappeared. The trees shimmered with a strange image. There were dozens of her reflected in the shiny trees. I felt like I was in a house of mirrors trying to find the real Rosie. I went over to one to get a closer look. The metal was cold, and the dog in the reflection was black. I glanced at the next tree. This Rosie had yellow eyes, and the next one had long fur. I realized they were all bad imitations of my dog. A wicked burst of wind blasted through the trees, and the metal branches scraped against each other, making a screeching sound that sent chills down the backs of my legs. The full moon shifted color from bone white to blood red. Rain pummeled the earth, instantly flooding the jungle. I found myself riding a giant wave toward a million lightning bolts, violently striking the earth, setting fire to a vast desert landscape. A terrible burning started in my hands, and yellow and red sparks jumped from my fingertips. Just as I was about to be thrown into the flames, I heard Miss Cab's voice.
"You left me as a chicken!"
I woke with a start, yelling, "Fire!" Hondo jumped in his seat, and the truck swerved.
"What the heck, Zane? You scared the bejesus out of me!"
Brooks groaned and sat up sleepily. Way to ruin a perfectly good dream. "Sorry, guys." I rubbed my eyes, trying to shake off the vision that had felt so real. I swear I could still feel the heat of that fire in my fingertips. And if Miss Cab was going to yell at me about being a chicken, I was going to toss that eyeball onto the highway. Where are we? I looked out at the darkness whizzing by. The desert, Hondo said with a chuckle. Brooks glanced out the window. She opened the road atlas, studied it, then looked out again. Hondo?
Yeah?
I think you missed the fork to I-10. Hondo craned his neck to see her in the rearview mirror.
You said to head straight.
On I-10. Hondo threw his head back and groaned.
I'll turn around.
We've gone too far to turn back, Brooks said. We'll have to head north from San Diego. Hondo hit the gas.
I'm on it, Capitan.
Maybe it's a sign we shouldn't go, Brooks said, twisting her mouth. I turned to face her. You really hate these guys that much, Brooks? What did they ever do to you? Brooks glared back out the window. Just get me to Venice. I'll do the rest. A restlessness crept over me as I once again wondered how much Brooks hadn't told me. What was her deal with these guys? I'd stashed my Maya book in my backpack in case we needed it. I consulted it, but there was nothing new about the twins in the pages. Anything else I wanted to know about them was going to have to be learned firsthand. It was 3 a.m. when we got to Yuma, a tiny desert town bordered by flat green farmland. We saw a sign for food, lodging, and gas. Hondo exited the highway and dropped Brooks and me at a jack-in-the-box while he went to fill up the truck at the gas station next door. Inside, the cashier was sitting on the counter, playing on his phone. When the door pinged, he didn't even look up.
You open? I asked.
Hang on, he said. A few more zombies to get to the next level. Gunshots, screams, and gurgling sounds filled the empty place. Brooks tapped her foot. We want 3 Jumbo Jack meals with cheese, and you'll get a good tip if you hurry it up. The guy looked up.
Tip?
He had acne on his cheeks, and his mousy brown hair fell over one eye. Coming right up, he said with a friendly smile. A few minutes later, the 3 of us were sitting by the window devouring our burgers and fries. The zombie-fighting cashier was in the next booth, back to playing his game. This place gives me the creeps, I admitted, before taking a gargantuan bite of my cheeseburger. Man, it tasted so salty good. I wished I'd ordered 2. Hondo took a gulp of his Coke. Just a case of the night creepers. World's different after midnight. I used to feel it, but now I like working at night. It's quiet and no one expects anything from you. Brooks ate all her fries, but only part way, leaving a pile of unwanted ends on her tray.
You don't like your fries? I asked, scooping up the leftovers.
I never eat the ends I touch.
How come?
What's it to you? She asked, frowning as I scoured her tray for any remaining scraps.
Sue me for being hungry.
A rumbling noise in the parking lot caught my attention. A trio of Harley riders pulled up to the joint. They wore leather vests, knotted headscarves, and narrow black sunglasses shaped like alien eyes. I felt suddenly claustrophobic, like the walls were closing in, and the ceiling was about to fall on our heads. The fluorescent lights buzzed overhead. The violent screams coming from the guy's cell phone didn't help. The door flung open, and the buff riders stepped into our space.
You smell that?
Brooks whispered, never taking her eyes off her tray.
Smell what?
Hondo asked. His back was to the door, so he hadn't seen the dudes yet. I wanted to pretend I couldn't detect the vomit and motor oil that permeated the greasy air, but it was too powerful to ignore. These riders weren't human and had the aftersmell of the underworld. My stomach plummeted. The cashier clicked off his video game and headed to the register to take the guy's orders. But they weren't interested in burgers and fries. The tallest of the bikers turned his head in our direction. His skin was waxy-looking and pulled tight over his skull. Okay, so maybe it was too late for a smooth exit. "How'd they find us?" I asked.
Brooks bent across the table and spoke in a low voice.
"Sure wish someone had thought to pick up my flashlights."
"I was busy saving your life."
Brooks rolled her eyes. "There's another exit over there. Let's get up slowly and carefully."
"What's with you two?" Hondo glanced over his shoulder. "You scared of a few flabby Harley dudes?"
My neck was sweating. What if I told you they were more like demons?"
Hondo stuffed a few fries into his mouth and tossed his napkin onto the tray.
"I'd say let's blow this joint."
The cashier leaned over the counter and asked the demon bikers, "You guys gonna order or what? No bathroom if you don't pay for something."
The three ignored him, keeping their glares on us.
Brooks inched toward the edge of her seat. The bikers headed our way. Their belt and boot chains jingled as they stomped across the linoleum.
"Now!"
I hollered, and the three of us raced toward the opposite door and out into the parking lot. But when we got to the truck, the trio was blocking our way.
I did a double take, not believing my eyes. The bikers were us.
"Are you seeing what I'm seeing?" I asked, frozen in my tracks.
"Dude," Hondo groaned. "Am I really that short?"
Brooks grabbed my hand. Her thoughts came at me full force.
"It's shadow magic, a war tactic to confuse your opponent. No one wants to pummel their own face."
"What do we do?" "I don't know. I've only read about it, never actually seen it. But there's always a weakness if you know where to look."
Hondo growled. "We can take these guys."
"They're not guys," I mumbled. "They're demons."
"Wicked," Hondo let out a low whistle.
"Demons that ride motorcycles?"
"It's an illusion," I told him.
Then to the monsters, I said, "I had a deal with your boss, and I've still got two knights."
The one that looked like me, down to the chin freckle and messy hair, popped his knuckles.
"Not our boss. The master of the underworld sent us."
The fake Hondo and Brooks grunted in agreement. Okay, these weren't your average demon runners. They could string together whole sentences. And what did they mean, master of the underworld?
"You mean Ishtab?"
I ventured. My head went into overdrive. If they were working for her, she must want to rip me a new one for releasing her mortal enemy. Maybe I could reason with them, impress them enough that they wouldn't chop off our heads. I clenched my fists at my sides.
"Tell your boss that Apooch is out to destroy the whole world, and we're going to stop him."
"We're not here for you, boy," my lookalike said.
"Wait, what? Did they say they weren't here for me? Didn't they know who I was?"
He snorted.
"Ishtab doesn't care what happens to this world, you little fool. A new world will always rise, and where there is a world, there is always death."
Hondo whispered in my ear, "I'll take the one that looks like me."
"I could scratch out their eyes," Brooks offered, squeezing my hand tighter. My companions were right. There was no way past these dirtbags, only through them.
No offense, guys," I said to the demons, "but I've got some travel plans. Maybe I can swing by later?"
"Give us the girl," my clone said.
"Girl? Brooks?" I held up my hand in protest.
"You guys have it all wrong. It's me you want."
Just when I thought the demons were going to lunge, thick handfuls of coarse black hair grew out of two of the demons' mouths at an alarming rate. It cascaded down their bodies and onto the ground, where it crawled toward us. We all screamed. I ducked, slipping between my lookalike monster's legs, but not before the hair reached me, climbed my body, and wrapped itself around my neck, covering my mouth and pinning me to the asphalt. Clutching the band of hair to allow me to breathe, I glanced over to see Brooks in the same position, kicking and squirming while the hair nearly obscured her face. But where was Hondo? Oh, God. Had the hair already smothered him? Had his twin taken him down?
No.
I saw him head-ramming his clone. Or was his clone head-ramming him? With every ounce of strength I had, I tried to tear the hair away from my throat and out of my mouth, but it was impossible. It was too powerful. I was going to get choked to death by demon hair. All of a sudden, Hondo was swinging a butcher knife around like a crazy man, hacking away at the black ropes. The hair hissed and writhed. Finally, it let me go. I scrambled to my feet. Hondo gave me a "these guys are nothing" smile. But before I could shout, "Look out!" his twin whacked the knife out of his hand and headbutted him in the back. He collapsed to his knees. Brooks rolled across the asphalt, grabbed the knife, and stabbed her demon in the leg. It fell to the ground, howling. My demon spun me into a headlock. It was too weird clutching my lookalike's skinny arm. Then it came to me. I knew the demon's weakness. With a left jab to his groin, I slipped out of his grasp, circled behind him, and swept his bad leg. As he collapsed, I jumped onto his back, locking him in a chokehold. Brooks was busy, running and ducking out of the Hondo monster's reach. Where the heck was Hondo? I jerked my guy's neck back like my uncle had taught me. Shrit! Uh-oh. His thin-skinned neck ripped open easily. Brooks was right. It was pretty creepy to demolish someone who looked exactly like you. He crumpled to his knees, and I hopped off his back as he gripped his open neck. Black tar-like gunk oozed out, along with chunks of hair. Man, the smell actually singed my nose hairs. Then he turned into a ribbon of black mist and was gone. One down, two to go. I spotted Hondo, tool belt secured around his waist, charging madman style, wild eyes, screeching howl. A screwdriver hurtled through the air and wedged into the Hondo demon's skull. "Bullseye!" Hondo hollered, pumping his fist. The Hondo demon stumbled, jerked the hammer free, and righted himself. His face began to crack like dried mud, crumbling to the ground to reveal, you guessed it, a blue-skinned monster head. Green veins throbbed and bulged. Slime oozed from the holes in his face, and his monster chest heaved.
"We want the girl alive," said the demon, "but we'll take her corpse if we have to."
The air twisted and shimmered. A silvery smoke rose from the ground, and now, instead of two Brookses, there were six. Three of them had the other three in a chokehold. Hondo crouched like a tiger, ready to pounce. My eyes searched each Brooks frantically, looking for any clue to tell me which was the real one. "You'll have to take us down if you want her," I said.
"Zane," all the Brooks captives said in unison, "it's a trick."
They were exact replicas, the voice, the freckles, the desperate eyes. How was I supposed to know which one to save? It was like my dream where Rosie had appeared in all the trees. I remembered the flood, the fire. My fingertips tingled. I felt an energy pulse beneath my skin and a power twisting from the vat of frying oil inside the restaurant. Or was it coming from deep in the earth? Whatever it was blazing hot. Something expanded inside of me, too big for my body to contain. I took a deep breath and then it was gone.
"What do we do?"
Hondo ground out. Immediately, the answer hit me.
"Change, Brooks!"
"Change into a hawk." It was one thing to look like Brooks. It was another thing to be Brooks. The Hondo demon said,
"No need for anyone else to die tonight."
"You're not taking her,"
I growled.
"Seems we're at an impasse," he said.
"I'll go with them," one Brooks said. Then another said, "Please, Zane, let me go."
Why wasn't she changing? It would be so easy if she would only shift into hawk form, because I was sure that was a Brooks thing no clone could pull off.
"Take me instead of her," I said.
"Zane, no!" one Brooks hollered, only to be echoed by the others. The Hondo demon laughed.
"Why would Ishtab want you?"
His eyes roamed my short leg.
"Because I'm the one who set Apoosh free."
I inched closer, heart racing, panic rising. But there wasn't time to be afraid.
"And he's coming for his throne," I said.
"It's too bad you guys are here fighting us instead of protecting your precious underworld. I bet Apoosh has already beaten down the door and stormed the place." A low growl came from the demon. His face tensed, and he looked